and welcome to Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. This is your host, Ryan Young. Welcome to the show. So, it's spring. It's not quite summer yet, of course, even though it feels like summer. That's coming up on June 21st. But lots of green plant growth is happening out there. And there is a project that McGill University has going on because of funding they received from Environment Canada, from the Environmental Damages Fund. And one part of that project is to remove an invasive species out near the McDonnell campus, or even parts of the McDonnell campus, and that's garlic mustard. So I don't know if you know this plant. It's pretty common. It's common in people's backyards more and more, but I remember when I lived in Ontario for a while near Toronto, I really saw it starting to replace the local indigenous flora in forests, you know, things like trilliums and trout lilies. And there were these little patches of forest around York University that were being completely replaced by garlic mustard. And that's now not happening yet here, but it's at our doorstep in the Montreal area and in many parts of Quebec. So people are starting to realize that, as is the case wherever it's a problem, you know, in order to try and protect our local indigenous flora, we need to remove it as quickly as possible. So I spoke to two students that this spring were working on removing garlic mustard, and their names are Capucine Pierrefeu and Isabelle Farrand, and I met them on the McDonald campus. So here is that interview now. Hello, this is Ryan Young with CKUT 90.3 FM and Equilibrium, and I'm here with two McGill students, Capucine Pierrefeu and Isabelle Farrand, who have been hired by McGill University to work on a project that they received funding for from Environment Canada to remove invasive species out here in St. Anne-de-Bellevue, where McDonald campus is, and also look for ways to replace those invasive species with native species and other alterations to the landscape that favor birds, especially migratory birds. So how are you doing today?
I'm doing well.
I'm doing good, thanks.
So Isabelle, maybe you could start by telling me what you're studying at McGill University.
Yeah, so I'm in my last year of studying. I'm in environmental biology with a specialization in wildlife biology.
And you, Capucine?
I'm also in my final year, and I studied in the School of Environment, and my specialization is biodiversity conservation.
Oh, that sounds great and very apropos with the project you're working on. So maybe explain, the best you can, the kind of general focus of the project.
So we target the one main invasive species, which is the garlic mustard. It's a plant that was imported here a long time ago, but it was to eat, and it has some medicinal value. And right now, since it's not from Quebec and it's growing everywhere, it doesn't have any competitors. So it's taking all the places that our native species usually needs. And we're losing a lot of species because of that.
And how has it been, Capucine, pulling it out?
Very painful on the hands. We have to wear gloves. But I think it's especially hard on the moral, because whenever we enter a patch, it looks very contained and it looks like we can tackle it. But then as we pull it out, we notice younger saplings underneath. So it's almost endless. And yeah, the task is huge for three students. So that's why we needed a lot of volunteers in the community around here.
Nice. And I know, Capucine, you're from France, but Isabelle, you're from Quebec?
Yeah.
And what part of Quebec?
I'm from Montreal, born and raised.
So did you know garlic mustard, or because of this project did you become acquainted with it?
Well, I heard of it in my other class, because I took some flowering plant diversity class and environmental, like, ecosystem class. So I've heard of it before, but I never noticed it the way I notice now. So when I go jogging or cycling, that's the only thing I'm looking for right now. It's if I see some of that. Wow.
And it is edible, right?
Yes. So when it's younger, it's the best because the taste is still milder.
Less bitter, yeah.
Yeah, and less bitter. And you can eat the stem, the leaves, and even the flowers. And also I've heard the roots, but I don't know how you would prepare those.
We tried some recipe. We were told like garlic mustard pesto was a good thing. We tried, and I feel like I did many recipes, and I haven't found the best one yet. So maybe it's just not in my taste, but we tried.
Yeah, it's even my attempts with that plant have not always resulted in something that good. Edible, but you know.
Yeah, we just need to find what the medicinal uses are useful for, and maybe it will be more useful in that regard.
Okay, and so the main areas where you've been pulling it out are where?
We went to, first of all, the MBO, so the McGill Bird Observatory, which is in Saint-Anne-de-Bellevue. We also went to the Morgan Arboretum, to the Cemetery Road, and the Mac Farm on the McDonald campus. So these were the main targets because we thought we were going to have a lot of volunteers and be way more people, but we were not. So we had to focus on the main area where spreading of the garlic mustard could be very damageable because there were a lot of native species and things like that. So that's why we focus on these sites.
And I guess part of the reason why it's hard to get volunteers is because school has ended and there's not many students around, right?
Yeah, during the summer, most students on campus here try to find internships. And I feel like in environment in general, you have to go away from the city. So the students that are left here are not particularly interested in that kind of events. Or maybe we would have to do it like turn it into a competition who can harvest the most. Maybe have like some kind of prize or start earlier in the season trying to hire volunteers.
I think that's the thing, because garlic mustard, you have to remove it before it starts seedlings, and that's about at the end of May, and we start the project at the beginning of May, so just getting everything together and plan the removal events, we were kind of late, and we didn't have a lot of time to reach out for volunteers, so we learn, and next year is going to be better.
And I mean, it's not really your mistake, McGill should have hired you earlier.
Yeah, so that's all on McGill then.
And of course, you're not just dealing with garlic mustard. I mean, are there other invasive species you might look at removing? And then what is the other steps that you're doing as part of this project?
There are many invasive species, but since the easiest one to remove is garlic mustard, we focus on that because it's only just taking it by the roots and pulling out of the ground. So we focus on that because we didn't have access to any like bigger machinery or thing like that to remove like bigger stuff. But eventually, maybe if we grow, we could target other invasive species, yeah.
And then what are you planning to do, though, to replace some of these invasive species?
So we've started writing a list of indigenous plants, especially those that flowers or would like attract pollinator insects or birds. And for the moment we have bloodroot, milkweed, what else? Wild ginger, asters, goldenrod. So species that are native to Canada and mostly Quebec. We don't want to introduce species that wouldn't be resistant to the winter. That's the plan for the moment.
And when you were pulling out garlic mustard, were mosquitoes a problem?
It was terrible. Mostly in the Morgan Arboretum. It was just terrible. We were wearing like face nets and everything. Yeah, but it's when you're after a day of work, you're kind of glad because you see all these garbage bags full of garlic mustard. I think we remove about 1,000 pounds of garlic mustard. So
heavy.
That's good. That's good. And there's how many students working on this?
So three at the beginning of the summer, one at the end. We're all living gradually.
So you're nearing the end of your time?
Today is my last day because I'm going on an internship in Labrador. So today is my last day.
Yeah, and I'm staying until mid-July. And then Thomas, the third student, is staying until the beginning of classes in September.
And you're going to Labrador. What's the internship there?
It's with QLF, so Quebec Liberator Foundation. And we're going to do a lot of teaching to the communities, some beach cleanups, some bird survey and marine mammal survey. And, yeah.
And in so far in the studying that you've been doing at McGill, Isabel, do you have a preference? Like, do you like birds more, animals, insects, plants?
I always was really into mammals, but then I kind of discover birds right now recently, because the lab where we are working for the invasive species is a bird lab. So we're working a lot with master students that are into birds, and I kind of developed my interest for that. And yeah.
And you, Capucine?
I wouldn't say it's more like an animal or a family, but it's more ecosystems that interest me. I really like forest ecosystems and like an ecosystem interaction approach. And also, I was always interested in tropical environments. So, well, we'll see. We're not in the right country for that, but we see where it leads.
And when you were doing your schooling in France, I guess in science-related stuff, how was the transition to go from there to here? And you can be honest.
Yeah, in terms of language, it was very hard. I remember the first few months, I think I had a headache most of the time because just the language adaptation. But in terms of academic, I think it was pretty similar. The expectations were like of equal academic qualification. But there were just a few minor details that, for example, a chapter was covered in one system but not in the other, like the order of teaching stuff. But in general, it was pretty smooth transition, I would say. I'm glad.
Nice. And how do you find McDonald campus, St. Anne de Bellevue? Did both of you take most of your classes here?
Well, I did, but of course, my first year was in COVID, so I did my first year remotely from home. And then my second year was here, and I really enjoyed it. I live downtown, so it's kind of every morning it took me an hour to get here, but whenever I get here, I'm glad to be here. We have access to so many, like we have access to the Arboretum, we're close to the shorelines, we have nice labs and everything. I love this campus, yeah.
And you, Capucine?
Yeah, so I'm in the School of Environment, so technically I can do both campuses, but just in terms of like the atmosphere, I much prefer McDonald. I feel like downtown it's a bit more competitive, professors have less time for you, we maybe don't look out for each other as much, and when you interact with other students, you find that most of them share your opinions on most stuff here at Mac. And yes, also because it's a small campus, we know most of our professors. We recognize them, they recognize us. We recognize other students, even from the shuttle bus. If you don't take classes with them, you just see their face every day. And yeah, the environment, it's quiet. You have the lake, birds, flowers. It's amazing.
And for this project, what was the process like to get hired? Did you have an interview? And who interviewed you?
Yeah, so I was, I did a class which was flowering plant diversity, and the TAs of that class was Vanessa, who is the student who's working in the lab we were hired with. And I emailed her because I thought her master was super interesting, and I asked her if she needs some help this summer, and she told me not yet, but right now there's someone in my lab who's looking for employees to work on this invasive species removal. If you want, I'll just send her an email so you can get an interview with her. And yeah.
And that was with Anna, or?
It was with Emily McDonald. Yeah.
And in your case, Capucine?
Last summer, I did a project with another student of Kyle in her lab.
Kyle Elliott?
Kyle Elliott, yes. He has many master's students, and she was also one of my TA for a class. She hired me for a project, and then afterwards, I sort of kept in touch with Kyle, and he sent me this job opportunity. And then I just sent my application, CV, maybe cover letter, and reference letters. And yeah, I got the interview, and then she told me I got the job. And I think she also said that Kyle in general prefers to keep students like in the lab. So if you did something for him or for one of his students, he will try to put you ahead of the list so that everyone with a similar interest or he knows would work best in the team, he will keep.
That's great. In terms of, the follow-up, I know, Isabel, today is your last day, but what do you think you'll be focusing on going forward? I know there's some tree planting as well, but...
Yeah, so at the moment, we're trying to buy the indigenous plants. It's a bit tough because we're late in the season and most people who are into gardening, they already ordered theirs. But we're trying to finalize the list of plants we will use, depending on their light, water requirement and everything. Then we need to order them. And the last step will be just planning the volunteer event because we will need a lot of hands for that.
And have you thought about different strategies to try and get volunteers?
I think the best strategy is really being in advance. Like, don't take it to the last minute like we did with the garlic mustard removal. And most of the time we did it during the week, so maybe we'll try to do some event on the weekend to make it more a family event, you know? So people, you don't have to come for 5 hours. You can come just for an hour with your kids, plan some stuff, and yeah, enjoy the day.
And why do you as students think studying in this area is important?
Well, personally, I'm an outdoor person. I was born and raised outdoor. My family trip was camping and things. So I really just want to protect what I value, which is the environment. And that's why I'm here right now.
And you, Capucin?
I don't really know where my passion from the environment stems from, but I'd say probably one of my high school teachers, she was like a crazy diver. She was so in love with it. She kept talking about nature and everything. And she wasn't an activist, but she loved talking about it. And I think seeing someone so passionate about what they do, especially something that's it's like natural, not even like in a pun sense, but it's everything we need. It's everything we are. So we just have to take care of it and not ignore the crisis we're in right now.
For sure. And what was one of the best experiences you had while you were studying here?
I think mine wasn't in the classroom. Well, some professors were amazing and inspiring, but studying conservation biology allowed me last summer to work in a national park. And I feel like the connections you gain with people who are also like in love with the outdoors, you just have like a different mentality about everything. You're more relaxed. You can be stressed also because of the crisis of environmental change, but yeah, you see things you only see on the TV or in the news. You meet people who are so involved and so in love with what they do, and they just want to share everything they know. So that's my best experience so far.
And which park was that?
Parc National de Gaspésie.
Very
great
nice.
Place.
Nice. And you, Isabel?
I think it's most of the time. Just I had a class. It was natural history of vertebrate with Murray, and every Friday morning we just went outside for a nature walk and see what vertebrate we would see. And he really is a specialist. So we were just walking and say, oh, let's say this is this kind of bird and this is this kind of thing, and just learning from being outside. I think it's really what I like the most about this class. Yeah.
Very nice, very nice. And do you know, in terms of the project, maybe you don't know the details, but I imagine this project, because it's funded from an environmental damages fund program from Environment Canada, that it won't end just with your work. And do you know what they may plan to do in the future?
Well, we know garlic mustard have a really big seed banks, okay? And that's the problem, how they are so invasive. It's just, even if you remove them, if you really want to get rid of them, you have to remove it for at least 5 years. So we believe the program is going to stay for at least 5 years if you really want to get rid of. We learned a lot with this first year, and I think we'll we're going to give a lot of feedback on how it went, what we should do better or different, and build a bigger project maybe next year on that. Yeah.
Do you have anything to add, Capucin?
Maybe that we were just the trial run this year. Yeah. So everything we do, we try to take note of so that we can improve or just completely like remove and add something more useful. So this is technically the first year, but last year the master student Vanessa in the lab, she started like mapping out where the garlic mustard was in Sainte-Anne. So she sort of did some pre-work for us, and then including you, you gave us a few maps of where garlic mustard could be found. We also talked to people in the Arboretum, they gave us maps. So there were some information that we had to start with, but we're hoping to make this the first actual first year of work that we can continue to build on.
But you won't be back in the fall, and neither will you, right, Isabel? Or, you know, you still will be back.
Yeah, I finished my bachelor in December. So after that, I'm done. But I'll see. I don't know what I'm doing next. Not yet.
And then do you know what your last semester will be like? Do you just have a few classes or?
Yeah, I have 4 classes. So I'm full-time student. And yeah.
And when do you come back from Labrador?
I'm coming back at the end of July.
Nice, nice. And Capucine, this is your last semester, so you have convocation and then you go back to France?
Actually, no, I'm going to Singapore for a master's. It's also in the same field. It's a long name. It's Biodiversity, Conservation and Nature-Based Climate Solutions. And it's a course-based master's, so I won't necessarily write a thesis, but I just want to continue learning more about what there is in a tropical environment this time, and hopefully have access to a larger job offer market. Yeah.
That's great. That's great. I mean, I asked you what your best experience was while you were studying at Mac. You've only been working for a short while, but what was one of your more satisfying experiences working on this project?
I will say at the end of each day on the field, we weigh all the garlic mustard we removed. And that's kind of the payback of the day, because, you know, you've been working under the sun with mosquitoes and you're just done with your day. But then you weigh and you see like bigger and bigger number. And I feel that's kind of the small reward of the day. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I really liked one event we did at the Mac Forum, because we had 3 volunteers and it was a nice, sunny, warm day. We could see the cows in the field. They were outside, so it was really picturesque.
And I know, I just thought of another question. I know that, of course, when you're in a university environment and there's new technology to use, and now there's global positioning systems, GPS, will this program also use GPS?
Well, we haven't did it so far, but we kind of, every time we remove some patches, we write it on a map, because like we just said, we have to remove it several times, so we need to keep track of where we did remove the thing if we really want to get rid of. So we keep track on maps, but yeah, probably if we have some time.
I think it's mostly for the tree planting part of the project that we will map the trees. So this is going to take place half now and half in the fall. And yeah, we've been asked to take the GPS point for each tree so that we can actually make a greenery corridor map to track the connectivity of habitats and make a real difference for the wildlife that use it.
And how have you found the community of St. Anne de Bellevue in terms of, now, I mean, I know not a lot of volunteers have helped you, but do you think St. Anne de Bellevue is potentially a good community partner in the future for projects like this?
Well, I think so, because the territory is pretty large across the West Island, and there's a lot of green spaces that are included in the municipality, so I feel like it's in their best interest to invest their resources in this project, yeah.
Yeah, I also think you can see that people value their green areas because you can see there's some, everybody have a garden almost around Saint-Anne-de-Bellevue, and there's a lot of park. I think it's a good partner, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you for the interview.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
And that was my interview with Capucine Pierrefeu and Isabelle Farran. And they are two students working out at McDonald campus for McGill University to remove invasive species, but also plant indigenous trees and shrubs and even flowering plants, ground cover type plants, but in our mature forests, in order to replace the places that they've been taking out garlic mustard with other things. So that project is going to continue, and it was nice to speak to them about that project. So I thought it would be interesting maybe to search for a presentation that's been made about garlic mustard identification and management. And I found this presentation by Mark Renz, who is a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And he does this presentation about the identification of garlic mustard. And then he goes into ways it can be managed and an overview of the techniques and the pros and cons. And at some point, he talks about the use of herbicides to manage or eliminate garlic mustard from our wild areas. And of course, you know, Equilibrium, you know, we've always been a show that has been in opposition to the use of pesticides, especially, you know, pesticides that were very damaging to human health and to, you know, the health of wildlife and so on. But obviously, you know, pesticides can be used in these more kind of surgical ways, and they are used in invasive species removal. They're used to get rid of Phragmites, which is a type of reed or grass that is replacing our indigenous cattails in wetlands and so on. And I know for that plant, which is particularly difficult to control, they use like a three-step process where they crush it and then they burn it and then they herbicide it. And then eventually it finally, you know, disappears and they can get rid of it. But nevertheless, you know, this presentation, he will eventually talk about the use of herbicides to eliminate garlic mustard. But he also talks about how, you know, you can create another problem, which is you can remove too much of the native or indigenous flora when you're doing this. But nevertheless, it is, you know, it's based on, you know, scientific studies that they did in terms of removing garlic mustard. But obviously out at McGill, they are just pulling out these specimens of garlic mustard and putting them in garbage bags. That's the main way that they are controlled. And there is a great series of videos on the Nature Conservancy of Canada YouTube channel about removing invasive species. So they have a section on pulling out garlic mustard, or they have a video on pulling out garlic mustard. They also have a video on pulling out common buckthorn, which is another invasive species, which is a problem in the Montreal area. So that's a good resource for removing invasive species. But we're going to play this presentation. It's been edited somewhat, about garlic mustard identification and management, from Mark Renz, who is a professor at the University of Wisconsin. So enjoy that.
Hello, my name is Mark Renz. I'm an extension specialist and professor at UW-Madison, and I'd like to talk to you today about garlic mustard and provide you with a brief overview of how to identify it, a little bit about its biology, and really focus in on some of the management options that are available to you. There's a lot of information available on our website, which is listed below, and you can always email me at the address. Well, first off, why do we care about garlic mustard? Well, it is a non-native invasive plant to the United States, and this is an example of what some of the worst-case scenario situations are. We can get these near monotypic stands where it's dominated by garlic mustard, very few other plants growing in the spring, and there's a cascade of effects that can range from competition with early ephemeral spring species to actually impacting regeneration of some of our hardwood trees. And so this is why we're really concerned about garlic mustard. And it's widespread. It's been present for decades in the United States. We have thousands upon thousands of observations, highly widespread, and really dominates many of our areas. Thus, it's received a lot of attention over the last several decades. So where does it invade? It actually historically has been really isolated to forested areas, particularly shaded areas, and this is still remains its dominant habitat that it invades. But as we're seeing now, it's starting to evolve and move out from some of those areas and starting to infest other areas as well. And this has been happening in other states for quite some time, but in Wisconsin, while we historically have seen it in these forested areas, now we're starting to see it invade some wetland habitat, some roadside full sun grassland habitat, and we're even seeing it really commonly in some urban areas. This is a flower bed in the middle of a garden in a county park. So we can get it now invading a wide range of habitats, not just exclusively in forested areas like it was in the past. So what is garlic mustard and what's its growth process? It's what we call a biennial plant. And what that means is we get seedlings that emerge in late March to early April. Those seedlings will become rosettes in the summer of that first year. And those rosettes will persist throughout the spring of the second year. And rosettes, if you don't know, are just a combination of leaves with no stem. These rosettes then in the second year, in late April to May, will form a stem and will bolt, is what we call. And those bolting plants will produce flower buds that will eventually flower in June in Wisconsin, producing these very clear, easy to identify flowers that will produce these distinct siliques or fruits in late June and early July of the second year. And then this plant will die by late summer, and the process will start over the following spring. We will get seedlings that will emerge. So it's a two-year process for this plant to complete its life cycle and go from seed to seedling to a fruiting plant that produces seed. While we talk about this life cycle, we have to realize that since this life cycle spans over 2 years, we can easily get multiple different phases present at once in the environment. So here's a picture of garlic mustard seedlings present in May, as well as some rosette plants and some plants that are just beginning to bolt. So we get a wide range of these stages that are present at one time in the environment. Therefore, it's really important to learn to identify each one of these stages. They have some key aspects that are present. For the rest of this presentation, I'm really going to focus on rosettes, flowering, and fruiting plants and how to identify and what some of those key characteristics are. Seedlings can be really challenging to identify, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. The one comment I will make is in late March, early April, there's very few other plants that are germinating, and so this is a good indicator in itself. That first true leaf also can look quite similar to some of those later emerging plants. And when they flower, these second-year plants are quite distinct. They produce an inflorescence that's anywhere from 1 to 4 feet tall. I've occasionally seen plants longer, taller than 4 feet. Each individual flower will have 4 petals that are relatively small, and you can see how they're born at the tips of the growing points. And as you can see to the right, as that plant starts to produce fruit, and we'll talk about the fruit in a second, we will get flowering that will still occur in the tips. And so you can have fruit and flowers that are present, particularly in late June in Wisconsin too. So another good identifying characteristics. And very few other white flowering plants are present in forest understories too. So this is a really good identifying characteristic. And when plants produce fruit, they produce these slender capsules that we call siliques. They're actually quite long, 1 inch to 2.5 inches long, and will, as they mature, will contain a single row of black seeds in that long fruit pod. So that's fairly distinct. There's just a few other mustards that you might get confused with those siliques, but I think some of these characteristics will help us in differentiating between those mustards and garlic mustard. Often the root, if you pull up the root, will have a bend in it or an S-shaped curve, and so that can be a good confirming characteristic as well that you can use for identification. So now I'm going to transition into talking about some of the tips for management. I want to highlight this by saying we're blessed that many control options are fairly effective to highly effective. So when we pick our management options, we really need to think carefully about which ones fit our situation. and realize that some of these management options work best when garlic mustard is at very specific stages. So we need to think about that. And as I'll talk about, some of the other plant species that are present. I think the other big point that we need to think about is before we start management, we have to have a plan in place. You know, these garlic mustard infestations can be really complex and can span a range of habitats. And so having a plan in place up front before we start management efforts can really help us in being efficient and getting the desired goal that we want. Really, how to develop a plan is beyond the scope of this, but I'll kind of highlight a few simple points and aspects that we need to think about. And if we're trying to get rid of garlic mustard in this site, really that plan should focus on preventing the production of seed, because that's what's sustaining that population over time. Those seeds are in the seed bank. Those seeds are coming in off of site. So we need to identify where those seeds are coming in from and where those seeds are in the environment and prevent production so that we can eliminate the presence of the seed in the environment. And that's going to take multiple years in most situations. Really, when we develop this plan, we really need to do a lot of work before we start. We need to get a really good understanding of where the infestation is, both on the property you're targeting and where it's coming in from. Because if you can't manage the source of that population, you're going to continually get reinfestation and have to manage that over time. And that's going to get frustrating if you're trying to get to the eradication standpoint. You also need to understand some of your site-specific restrictions. You know, some sites you may be able to burn, some sites you may be able to use certain herbicides, some sites you may not. You really need to understand what those restrictions of those sites are, and also what are some of the sensitive species that you really want to protect in the understory as well. And then the final thing that I think is really critical is you need to understand what resources you have available as a manager to help you in this battle against garlic mustard. Some people might have a slew of volunteers. People might have access to professionals. You might have a budget for this, or you might not. It might just be a one-person crew. You really need to assess that and use that information in picking some of your management techniques. Now, jumping into some management, I think I pulled together this table to kind of highlight the different ranges of techniques that we have. We can utilize hand pulling, mowing, prescribed fire, and I'm really going to focus on spring prescribed fire for these woodlands, but there's other timings that can be successful. And we have a range of herbicides that we can use in herbicide methods. IPT stands for individual plant treatment or spot treatment, or we can broadcast these herbicides. And the key points I want to make is that these tools are effective on different life stages of garlic mustard when you apply them. So for example, if we were to use prescribed fire in the spring or herbicides, we're going to get really good control on seedlings. But hand pulling and mowing really isn't that effective. It's going to miss those because the seedlings are so low to the ground, whereas hand pulling just isn't realistic for the seedlings because there's just such a carpet of those species. So as you can see, really we're targeting and hand pulling when those plants are bolting or flowering, hand pulling if we're removing it, we can use for fruiting plants. Spring burn, prescribed fire or burning, we're really only targeting the seedlings. We may get some of those rosettes. We may control depending on the time of when we do it and the fire intensity, and I'll talk more about that. And herbicides, we actually have a much wider range of when we can control them and effectively control garlic mustard. I'll talk about the question mark at fruiting plants at the end of this presentation. What I want to emphasize here is while we can use this information to highlight when we want to, which technique we want to use at what time, we also have to consider the desirable plants in the understory. Because while we can maximize the timing of our tool to maximize control, several of these tools are going to have the potential for some non-target plant injury. Now, we can mitigate that sometimes by looking at the timing of when we apply that, but I want to emphasize that mowing and herbicides, particularly broadcast herbicides specifically, have the potential for really high non-target plant injury, depending on the time when we apply those. And we'll talk more about that later on in the presentation. So wanted to talk about the different control methods and kind of the pluses and minuses of each one. I want to emphasize that I'm not going to be talking about biological control in this presentation. Why not? Is because it's not registered for use in the United States. There are no biological agents that you can purchase and release legally. There is a permit in place, and in Canada they are conducting this. This may be an option in the future. It is going through the registration process and has been approved by the technical advisory group called TAG, but is awaiting further regulatory approval. So I'm just not going to talk about it. This may be an option in the future, but it's not an option at the current state. So I'm going to skip this control method. A lot of people have historically relied on hand pulling garlic mustard plants, and it's very effective. The best timing is clearly in the spring when plants are bolting or flowering. And as you can see, it can be really effective if done at the correct stage. We have lots of volunteer groups that are trained to do this and can literally pull out hundreds of pounds of garlic mustard from a forest, as you can see in some of these pictures. And so really the advantages are it's easy to do, it's easy to train people to do and get people out there to do it. And I think they feel good about doing this. Some of the disadvantages, though, of hand pulling is that whenever you pull a plant, you're creating some type of disturbance in the soil. And there's some suggestions that that increase in soil disturbance may have some negative impacts on the forest. And it's also increasing the potential for other non-desirable plants to get established in that disturbed framework. You also have to be careful on how you dispose of those populations. Some of those might produce viable seeds. You need to make sure and manage that those pulled plants carefully. If there's fruit present, you need to make sure and put it in a location where that seed won't spread. And I think the biggest disadvantage to this management method is that we have heard lots of volunteers that have gone out for multiple years to hand pull garlic mustard populations just to come back to see more and more and more of it. And they really can get discouraged and just kind of give up on some of these events and attempts to control. And so this is something that I think we need to keep in mind and really want to maximize the positive aspects of getting people to volunteer for invasive plant control. Mowing is another aspect that has been used to a certain degree and has had some level of success. Really, the timing for mowing is similar to hand pulling, although we don't recommend mowing when those salix or fruit are starting to mature. So really the best times when it's bolting or just beginning to flower is when we recommend mowing. Again, it's really effective at preventing seed production. It can limit it, if not eliminate it. And you can use equipment, not such as this equipment here, but such as a weed whacker or string trimmer, and limit some of the injury to the desirable plants. I think some of the disadvantages is we have heard some reports that plants can resprout after mowing, particularly if you're mowing it when plants are bolting, and they may still be able to resprout and produce some flowers and potentially some seed. We're not sure how viable that seed is, and it's almost certainly going to be a much less lower number than if we did nothing, but there is some potential for some viable seed production. I think in some cases the window for treatment timing can be short, you know, from bolting to flowering to fruit can in some cases be 2 to 3 weeks, so we need to be conscious of that. And I think the other big issue with mowing is we have to haul this equipment through the woods, and hauling anything through the woods can be a challenge because of it getting snagged on trees and branches and other things too. So it may have some limited windows where it would be effective. A lot of people are interested in using fire for managing garlic mustard. You know, fire can be applied at a wide range of different timings. And really, the biggest benefit is really targeting the seedlings. So if seedlings are present and small, we've heard reports of high levels of control, near 100% control of seedling to very, very young rosettes. The challenge, though, is some of those rosettes that are in their second year may survive those, and likely a large proportion of them will survive 30, 50, 80%. But the level of survival is going to depend upon the heat of the fire too. So I think it's a good tool to be looking at and utilized. It's really effective on seedlings. I would not expect 100% control of rosettes. So we're going to need to go back and manage those rosettes that are missed in some of those fires. And again, it depends on the heat of those fires. Some disadvantages that I'd point out is that there is some suggestion that this fire may promote future germination in the future. So you may get a second flush after the fire of seedlings. Some more research needs to document that. And really, you know, we're not controlling those rosettes. And so if you have some survived, you're going to need to go out and control those with other techniques to prevent seed production. I think a final disadvantage is you're going to need to have some advanced training to conduct these tools. in this technique. I will say that others have used a propane torch to do this in a spot treatment level, and that can work really well as well. Again, expect less than 100% control on those rosettes and plan on them needing to be revisited as well. And then finally, I'm going to talk about herbicides, and really herbicides can be an effective tool. The use of herbicide is specific to the product you're using and the active ingredient, the timing of when you use it, and even the rate. And we're going to get into some, but not all of those details. I think there's a little bit more flexibility in when you can apply these herbicides. But some of the disadvantages come into the selectivity on some of the desirable plants in the understory. So I think the big advantages of this tool is that it's can be really, really effective. We can get high levels of control consistently across a wide range of environmental conditions. And compared to, particularly we have large infestations, it can be really cost effective compared to hand pulling and others if you're paying people to do that or even mowing. Some of the disadvantages, however, are the potential for non-target injury to some of the desirable herbaceous plants that are present. And so how do we make these applications so we minimize that non-target injury, or do we care about that non-target injury? Some people may have monocultures where there is so desirable plants. And then, you know, we highly recommend that there's some sort of training. So the challenge with using herbicides is really trying to figure out which herbicide to use. We're fortunate that there's many products that are registered and effective for use, but it can really be challenging to figure out the best fit for you. You can see you need to look really dive into the details, such as what rate do we want to apply them at? Are we broadcasting it or spot treating it? When is the application timing that's best for that product? And then what are the potential injuries and residual activities if we apply some of these herbicides? So lots of products are available. These are ones you really should look at and evaluate. And really what I recommend if you're looking at using herbicides is you pick up a fact sheet from a reliable expert or expert organization and read those fact sheets in detail to help in the selection process. On the left is our fact sheet that has some detailed information. There's another one by USDA that we were involved in writing, but there's many, many others from other groups and organizations. So I highly recommend that you read some of those and then contact your local experts to get some advice on selecting the right one if you have questions, because there's lots of details involved in this selection process. Timing not only matters for control of garlic mustard, but it also matters for obtaining desirable plant cover. Because of these results, many of our applications we're really recommending are early spring applications before those desirable understory plants emerge, because we can control the seedling garlic mustard plants as well as those plants that are going to flower. Late spring timings also work, but we're going to have less of the desirable plants present, especially if we have lots of garlic mustard, where we're putting a lot of herbicide on the landscape. And while the fall methods are effective, we end up with these seeds of garlic mustard, so we would have to come in the next fall and control those to prevent seed production. So we really like these spring applications because we can get 2 years of control and prevent seed production in those cases as well. And if we can go early enough, we can result in some desirable plants. So many of those, that previous experiment was really focused on non-residual products that just have post-emergence activity on garlic mustard. And there are several products that actually have significant residual activity. And the big question is, what's the fit for that, for using them to manage garlic mustard? What I mean by residual activity is not only do these products have post-emergence activity that can control emerged garlic mustard plants, but it also persists in the soil for a specific amount of time, and the soil residual activity prevents the emergence or germination of plants that have yet to emerge. And really, we have three products that we're really looking at for effective garlic mustard residual activity: Metsulfuron, trade name Escort, Imazapic, trade name Plateau, and Sulfametron, trade name Oust. And all these products have very high levels of post-emergence activity, but also will prevent the germination and establishment of new seedlings of garlic mustard for months even up to a year after application, depending upon the rate and the environmental conditions. So typically with these products, what we're doing is applying them in the fall or spring, and that's going to control the emerge vegetation, and then the residual activity will prevent future seedlings from emerging. The real benefit of these is that besides a high level of control, it's registered for use in a lot of different habitats where garlic mustard grows. So while it's effective at garlic mustard, the big challenge is how do we deal with the desirable plants, particularly the broadleaf plants, because these products tend to have residual activity on a wide range of broadleaf plants, and we get limited to no emergence for 6 months to potentially even a year after treatment, depending on the product and the rate. While some of these are safe to grasses, particularly escort or metsulfuron, others have activity on those grasses as well, and so we can really expect limited desirable plants. So really, it's a challenge to find the fit for these areas. I think that where we have really dense populations, where we really don't have any desirable herbaceous plants, and we're really focused on woody plant regeneration and the health of the woody plants in the forest and aren't really concerned about the herbaceous plants, is where these are a good fit. Maybe remote areas that are hard areas to get back to, and we want to get multiple years of control out of one treatment. So we've kind of talked about some of the general aspects of herbicides, and we've talked about which herbicide gives us the best level of control. But I just want to point out, to remind the you as listeners, that our ultimate goal is to prevent seed production, and while we want to prevent the cover of garlic mustard, even our herbicides that weren't particularly effective, when we applied them in the spring to plants that were going to flower, we prevented seed production. 90 to 100% seed production was eliminated, and in almost all cases, we had close to 100%. So remember that that's our ultimate goal. If we can prevent seed production and repeatedly do that until that seed bank is depleted, we can have successful control of garlic mustard. And so let's remember that in this aspect. Even if we don't get 100% control of the foliage, as long as we prevent seed production long term, that's a good thing too, because these plants will die. They will not regrow the next year. Then we need to think about, okay, if I want to use this herbicide, is it legal to use it in the habitat I'm interested in? Different products have different restrictions that are available to them, and so you really need to read the label, be familiar with what those restrictions are. Then thirdly, you need to think about, well, what are some of the desirable plants that I have present in this system? And is my application method going to impact those desirable plants? And if so, for how long? If I apply a residual product, is there potential to impact later emerging species, and for how long? And is there something I can do to minimize that impact? Can I apply it at a time frame or reduce the rate to minimize some of that impact? So those are things you need to think about. Often those are hard questions to answer, but I still encourage you to think about it. Spot treatment, treating at timings when desirable plants aren't there, can be really effective techniques to minimize some of these impacts. And then finally, like, well, if I plan on doing something in the future, like planting other species, will this have an impact on the success of that? Again, other things to think about. And then I always like to remind people to think about the cost. A lot of people don't think about this, and some of these can be quite expensive. Sometimes some of these side methods can be more cost effective than doing some of the manual labor methods as well, depending on your labor pool, if they're volunteers or not. So these are all things you need to think about when making any type of management decision, really. And this is really why we encourage you to consult an expert if you have questions on how to move forward with a decision process in management. Okay, so kind of sum things up with respect to management, and really to kind of hone in on some of the key aspects you need to think on when managing garlic mustard. First off, you need to think about the goal. What is our goal in managing garlic mustard is to prevent seed production and also to prevent seed from getting into that site from an external source. If we can do that for multiple years, we're going to see a dramatic reduction in garlic mustard populations. But if we can't find the source of where that seed is coming in, we can do the best job on the land we own, but we're still going to get deposition coming in off-site. And a great example is if you have a riverbed that's covered with garlic mustard that flows into your property, you need to control that garlic mustard on that riverbed or that riverine area, because you're going to get a new deposition of seeds every year from that river and that floodplain environment that's going to require that you're going to need to control that continually unless you control the source of that infestation. While we have a wide range of control options available, we're going to have better success if we're controlling populations where there's just a few or a few small populations of newer plants versus widespread populations. Why is that? We have less seeds in the seed bank. We have other plants present that can be competitive and compete with those. We have a better chance of success. So we encourage you to start in those areas where the populations are just spreading and then work your way back into those other areas. You'll see a lot larger success and get a lot less frustrated at the results. Some of those dense populations, we can go in and get control, but we just don't see any desirable stuff coming back. Again, we are blessed. There are a range of techniques that are effective. We just need to figure out how we're going to use these techniques to optimize our control. And we really need to dig into the details of each method, thinking about when to apply it, how I apply it, what the impacts and costs are going to be as well. And again, hopefully some of these resources like this presentation are going to be a good start to helping you understand some of those details. So that's my conclusion. I want to thank you for listening to this presentation, and I want to leave you with a list of some resources where you can get some additional information on garlic mustard and other invasive species. And I want to just leave you with this message, is that we can be successful. We can recover sites that are loaded with invasive species and maintain ecosystem health and productivity, as you can see in this picture on Picnic Point, which was loaded with some invasive woody species. And when they were removed and controlled, we saw the return of trout lily and many other beautiful, desirable plants. So there can be success, and I encourage you to be diligent about this and work carefully to maintain some of our beautiful conservation areas that we hold to Wisconsin, the Great Lakes, and beyond.
And that was a presentation by Mark Renz, who is an extension specialist and a professor at the University of Wisconsin at Madison, and he was talking about controlling or removing garlic mustard. So we're all out of time here on Ecolibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. So thanks for listening to the show. We're going to leave you with some music, but before I do that, I'll tell you, you can email us at ecolibrium@ckut.ca. You can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/ecolibrium ckut Montreal. And we'll be here again next Tuesday, same time, on 90.3 FM. So here is some music from Richard and Linda Thompson from their album of the same name. And this is the song, I Want to See the Bright Lights Tonight, from 1974.
see what's being done to my kind. Every day, I'm being haunted as prey. My people don't want no trouble. We've had enough struggle. I just wanna live. God, protect me. I just wanna
A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
The year is 2020, the number. Another summer, get down. Sound of the funky drummer. Music hitting the heart, cause I know you got soul.
Revolution sisters. The information.